Hey, pull up a chair. It's Hacks on Tap with David Axelrod, Robert Gibbs, and Mike Murphy.
Too much of what's happening in our country today is not normal. Donald Trump and the MAGA Republicans represent an extremism that threatens the very foundations of our republic.
Mike Murphy, it's the gun has gone off, the starting pistol, we're into the midterm sprint here.
That's why we're panting to our listeners. We're now in full Hacks trot. You know, we had tweeted that we'd be joined by Brother Gibbs, but apologies, he had an emergency. We're still not sure. I think we have to put the Hacks on Tech detectives on full alert here to figure it.
I think it was of a work nature, not a personal nature. I don't want people worrying about him. Yeah.
Well, I told him not to take that North Korean client. You know, they're very unforgiving. They're always demanding attention. But no, Gibbs wanted the money.
Well, and they gave him a rocket too. I think was part of the deal. That's what he wanted to have his own.
Yeah, he's in orbit now.
But listen, there are two central players who are out in the middle of this thing now, and they're very familiar. They're Biden and they're Trump. Trump had a big 2-hour rally on Saturday in Pennsylvania. Very familiar stuff. We'll hear a little bit about that in a second. But tell me what you think of the strategy of Biden and this particular angle that democracy is on the ballot and you have to come out and vote to save democracy.
You know, I really have mixed feelings about it. I mean, look, as a citizen, I totally agree. I think it was an appropriate speech, and I agree with every word. So, you know, he's got me, but he's always had me because I'm rabidly anti-Trump. The question is for the midterm hole that he is in. So I think the speech did no harm because his side of the equation, his half of the country, loved it. It adds the equation that they're the righteous army saving democracy. And, you know, they have a case about that because of the things that have happened on the crazy right. That said, I think the election is going to be about middle class economics. And that's where Biden's getting killed. That's why his unfavorable ratio or his job approval is upside down. It's been creeping back a little, but it's still awful. So I think if this becomes the hammer of the entire election, which is I'm right, they're evil, it doesn't move the needle for him. And I don't think it's the answer politically.
So I talked to a guy in Pennsylvania, and I know we're going to get into the Pennsylvania Senate race later, but who told me, who was sharing a private poll, and he said Fetterman is currently getting 11% of Trump voters, and Biden has a 17% approval rating among those 11%. I mean, it's small samples, but fair to say that Biden's not popular with those people. So the question is whether Biden going out and sort of bashing people. And I know he keeps trying to make the distinction between good Republicans and bad Republicans. So don't worry, Murphy, you're not being tainted by
well,
all of
God.
This. Yes.
I was very afraid.
if you are still a Republican, I don't know if that.
I'm a conservative patriot.
But here's the thing. This person was worried that this doesn't help because they need some of those Trump voters. They need to peel away some of the Republicans. Interestingly, in the governor's race, I think there's a similar number, but they're getting different kinds of Trump voters. Fetterman's getting working class, voters probably between Pittsburgh and Philly and small town voters.
Yeah, and that's his special trick, right?
And Shapiro's getting the suburban Trump voters, but right. Neither of them necessarily profit if Biden puts himself in the middle of it and partisanizes it in the way that he did.
Yeah, no, I come at it two ways for exactly those reasons. On one hand, as what a president ought to say about the state of the country, I totally agree with it, the larger cause. But as far as grubby mid-year politics are concerned, I think it's divisive in an unhelpful way for the Democratic cause. And it's also for Biden is, we're going to rehash the old fight again. You know, it is a tired old argument. One side really agrees. One side really doesn't. It polarizes everything. It tells everybody they got to go stand up with their tribe. I just don't think it moves the needle. My general rule on these things is anytime the Democrats give a big speech or try to align the election with a speech that the New York Times editorial board would jump to its feet and wildly applause, they're probably not working the politics right, because they're talking inwardly, not to the voters they need to appeal.
Unfortunately, these conversations we're having are recorded, so all our forecasts and predictions are there for posterity
what?
To review.
Nobody told me that one.
Yes,
oh,
we
I'm
sent
screwed.
The order out to destroy all of that. we tried to, you know, we tried to pull a Trump and get all the tape and hide it in your basement, but apparently we weren't successful. So everyone who listens to this knows that. We were really, I mean, I've been very glum about Democratic prospects for a long time. That has clearly changed. It has changed, I think, because, and I think I've said this before in the last few weeks, but because of, events in June and beyond, but mainly Dobbs, which is hugely motivational in a way that I thought it would be motivational, but more than I ever imagined. That combined with Trump's reemergence at the center of the party, not taking the party to the center, but he's in the center ring, and bringing with him all these kind of nutty extreme candidates whose main qualification is that they're willing to affirm his craziness about the last election, and all of that. And then, by the way, there were two mass shootings in the middle of that. All of that has, I think, helped create a sense where 6 months ago, independent voters were saying, gee, they were Democrat. And Biden's been tugged way to the left. And, you know, that worries me. They're looking at the Republican Party. They're saying, geez, I don't know about these guys. And you can see it. I think in the Wall Street Journal poll, there was significant, maybe 11% jump among independent voters for Democrats. So you see a big shift there. Among independent voters for Democrats. Yes. So my thing is, that's working. So is it helpful for Biden to reinsert himself in the center ring, or when your opponents are destroying themselves?
No, exactly.
Shouldn't you let them do that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this whole Democratic comeback thing is fascinating, and I think about it a lot. I'm trying to figure out how much of it is a confirmation bias deal, in that they were so down and so depressed that Republican stupidity in the campaigns, we're going to talk about a bunch of other things like that as we get into the races, but, you know, how much of it is, there's definitely been an inching this summer back to the Democrats and what has been a terrible environment for them. You know, will it land there at the end? Because I'm old. I'm in the Jurassic wing of the consulting business, as are you. And we all remember when summers kind of go one way and then the fall people zero in and it can go the other. And I don't know the answer to that yet. I do agree with you on Dodd, and the Roe decision has put some energy into the Dems they didn't have. It may turn out some younger presidential year voters who lean Democrat. You know, there's all kinds of good stuff they may get politically from that.
Well, a lot of the battlegrounds are in the suburbs, and it's going to be particularly impactful there.
Right.
You can see in registration numbers, women are responding in many of these
states. Not only
states.
Women, young men. You know, that's the most pro-choice group, and also bad at voter turnout in midterms. But anyway, to your point, does this fighting the great Trump war over again, is that the most optimal thing? And does it pull the attention away from punishing Republicans and put Biden, who's got popularity problems, right back in the middle of the voters' angry eyes? I agree. Risky. Now, if this is a one-and-done deal where he's planted the flag for democracy, rallied his troops, and they're going to pivot forward to the do-nothing Republicans, et cetera, then I can kind of see
I'm told that he wants to barnstorm.
On this?
Well, yes, I think it was the key to his speech on Labor Day. But beyond that, I think he wants to go out and campaign for Democrats twice a week. And I'll tell you something,
He may run out of Democrats who are ready for the Sopwith camel to land on the barnstorming.
I agree.
By the way, bad analogy. If I were him, and you know, maybe it's just us saying it because it's a wonderful word, but I would, you know, I'm going to barnstorm, and then we got to make some talkies here. It kind of antiquates him a little.
And look, Biden has had a great summer. He has got a series of legislative achievements. By the way, if I were doing a speech on democracy of the sort he was making, I would have made much more of the fact that, you know what, there are Republicans who stood up to the loud voices in their own party and actually worked with us to get some important stuff done.
Yeah.
And that's how democracy works.
If I worked there for Biden, I'd last about an hour. But if I did, I would for 4 months, I would have been.
Be a productive hour, though.
Why don't we make this CHIPS thing the Apollo program? Why is this not a big national thing?
Right.
Taking leadership of the future economy of jobs that pay $100,000 a year in the industrial Midwest and across the country away from the Chinese communists. Go America. And we got in this fracture time, we actually united the parties on it. Why is not leading that parade?
60% of the voters or more who are going to vote in the primary in the general election also are older, and they just did this negotiating for Medicare drug costs. I know you and I can debate the merits of that, but it's wildly popular. In fact,
everything
that's in that bill they passed is popular. But on the bipartisan stuff, they've produced, you know, infrastructure, guns, the CHIPS bill, a lot to crow about. But my point is this: I understand if I'm Biden, I'm thinking, we've done a lot. I can go out and sell it. I should go out and sell it. I would advise him to go inspect the Pacific Fleet.
Yeah, I understand Guam. There's some problems with the naval base there. He needs hands-on leadership for the next few months.
Talking to a Clinton guy, Mike, who said back in 94, when they were in deep trouble and it turned out to be a disastrous election for them, Clinton was overseas for September and they began to make some tentative progress. And then he came back and hit the campaign trail. And, you know, he is maybe the greatest campaigner of our time, you know, but they said it hurt because it put him right back in the center ring. So I question sort of how they're framing the democracy argument. I think the better argument is we're getting stuff done that actually helps your lives. They're on this extremist bender. So create that choice. Do you want to go with the extremist nuts or do you want to go with people who are actually doing everyday things to improve your lives and go through all those achievements?
160-some Republican members of Congress voted against tens of thousands of good-paying American jobs, and they voted on the red Chinese side of the equation, on CHIPS that power. I mean, there's so many bumper sticker attacks to keep them on the griddle, I don't mind putting Biden out there if he's fighting do-nothing Congress Biden, but if he's out there saying, hey, see this halo? I'm here to save democracy if you're not with it on two levels. One, it is not the argument of traction that'll move forward. It's a rehash of the old stuff. People are exhausted. Both sides go to their corner. And two, as you say, it makes it about him, and he doesn't have the numbers to make it about him right now. But he sure wants to, and he's gonna. He's the 800-pound gorilla. He's gonna go out there, and he's gonna own this.
Part of it is so many. There's so much discussion about what's going to happen in 24, and I think this is part of, you know, sending a signal that he has, you know, he's here, he's fighting, he's beating his chest, he's, you know, vigorous, the best thing for Joe Biden would be for Democrats to overperform in the fall.
Right.
That would be the best thing for Joe Biden.
So he ought to get out of the way.
Right. I mean, they ought to be asking the question, what can we do that would maximize our chances of doing well in the fall? And it's not for him to be out there, and it's not for this particular argument.
Well, they think they're proving that he's been taking his vitamins and he's feisty Biden, and boy, oh boy, he ought to be our nominee. What they're really going to prove is he's totally capable of losing a big election to Republicans. I mean, he's going to own this thing bigger if he makes it about him.
But anyway, but we shouldn't. He's not the only one who's mucking things up. You know,
fair enough. It's a fair fight.
Let's talk about the other guy. Hey, Jeff, play that clip from Trump's diatribe on Saturday night.
And frankly, Republicans locally that ran things in a lot of states should be ashamed of themselves. Should be ashamed of themselves. And a guy like Mitch McConnell, who allowed this stuff to happen, should be scorned. He should be scorned. The 2020 election was rigged and stolen, and now our country is being destroyed by people who got into office through cheating and through fraud.
Oh, such a cheap demagogue. I mean, it's just, it's so grim. But yeah, there he is having one of his Castro nervous breakdown speeches. But you know, look, here's what I think he's thinking, and God knows that's a funhouse mirror, but big legal trouble, slow like lava, but it doesn't stop. And I think that he thinks the best legal defense form is to elevate himself into the election and make it as political as possible. Then he has a narrative, they're out to get me.
Yes, and you.
Yeah. They're against us. Everything is us and we.
Yes, because I am, you are me. It's a great autocratic thing.
You're a great leader.
By the way, he did the line in that speech. He said, "This isn't. They're not just trying to silence me. They're trying to silence you."
Right. No. I'm just the instrument of the great masses that I dictate and will immediately, with fascist flair, throw into jail who oppose me. Because as the Messiah, you know, I need your cheers, not your thoughts. But anyway, he knows that the legal system hates to interfere with elections and go after candidates. You know, that's like rule one. So he's thinking if he can turn himself into that, he will have a more robust, not only rhetorical defense, but there will be hesitation on the prosecutorial side, which is why he might, even though I think politically it's bad for him, it shows such weakness, he might announce sooner rather than later. Purely, I worked for an AG once who was got jammed up with something. It was kind of a borderline charge. it's a long story in it. He was running for governor and he was running hard as hell because he thought, I believe, never said this, if he became the nominee, it would be harder for the semi-bullshit charge against him they had to be prosecuted all the way because he had a personal beef with the U.S. attorney who had once worked for him. But he lost the primary. And then they went after him, and he went to college for a little while. Mm-hmm. Sent me a nice note that he was learning all about how to run an SNL. Now he's back, reformed, and doing great.
You know, Dan Rostenkowski used to call. He was in Oxford. I think it was Oxford, Wisconsin. And he used to say, "I'm going up to the university for a couple of years."
Yeah.
When he got convicted. So that's what you meant by college.
Yeah, sharp upper. I've heard that. I love that term of art. Yeah, that guy at Goldman, he got caught inside, went to college for a few years. but anyway, to the point, I think the legal stuff is pushing Trump to put himself even more in the center of politics. God help the Republican Party.
Well, the interesting thing to me about that clip was the roar of the crowd when he mentions McConnell.
So here's
Mitch McConnell trying to elect a Senate majority, and here are Trump Republicans who are absolutely incensed and, you know, aflame with hatred for him. And, you know, I'm saying what is remarkable to me is the Republican Party 4 or 5 months ago were headed for a huge victory this fall. I mean, I think we all felt that way, and they still may pull out significant gains, although it really looks to me, I think that Nate Silver's group, the 538 guys, now have, based on polling, a 68% chance that Democrats hold on to the Senate. I don't know what the odds are, but I do think Dems will probably hold on to the Senate. And then, you know, the House is going to be narrower and so on. But they were headed for a huge gains, and they were all picking out their offices.
Yeah, no,
and
it's a disaster. Yeah.
And now, you know, everything's up for grabs, and you guys are acting like Democrats. You're at each other's throats.
I know. It's incredible. Yeah. We certainly are. So just a sidebar on poor Mitch. I just saw a poll in Utah where I'm working on a super PAC helping Evan McMullen, the independent.
Who's the independent, yeah.
Yeah, quite a race. People should Google him. There's a lot going on in his big speech
today.
We
should spend some time on that at some point.
It's a fascinating race because the Democrats aren't really running anybody. They know McMullen is a kind of center-right guy, but they don't like Lee, and there's no loss.
Pro-democracy guy.
Yeah, so a single-digit race. It's pretty hot. It's fascinating. But anyway, so in this poll, the most unpopular person in Utah is McConnell. Because all the Democrats hate him as the stage villain they see Mitch as. And the MAGA Republicans, you know, more than half the party there easily, all hate him because Trump says to. So he's got like horrible. I mean, I 70 unfavorable. It's unbelievable. He ought to go endorse Lee. It would be good. So that McConnell thing is definitely kind of clicked out there. So we have this civil war between the cowardly regulars and the eye-bulging Trump rioting masses in a year where we should absolutely go to town, generically, we Republicans, the extent I'm even loud in the club.
And historically,
anymore.
I mean, you
historically,
should.
Yeah, no, everything's working our way. So the biggest campaign going on right now is the campaign of Republicans under the Trump spell versus opportunity. And, you know, they're destroying it. And, you know, we should talk about the NRSC mess.
Yeah, well, to talk about that, because part of this, McConnell is not only fending off Trump, but also he's got issues within his own
caucus. Yeah.
Caucus here, because he appointed Rick Scott, the senator from Florida, head of the Republican Senate Committee.
I don't know if it was a point, but kind of collective nudging, because I don't think he's ever been a big fan. I don't speak for Mitch. But the bottom line is, so we ought to back up a minute. So the parties always have three big committees, as you know well, RNC, DNC. But the House campaigns, there's a committee that congressmen run that is in charge of that, the D-Trip on your side and the NRCC on mine, and then same for the Senate. So the National Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee, the NRSC, big, big organization. A senator takes it every term, kind of elected by the colleagues, and they spend a ton to help win Senate seats, particularly bail out incumbents, but also try to win some challengers. So Rick Scott, Senator Zillionaire from Florida, has the committee. Now, there's always, as we both remember from our consulting days, a lot of backbiting about who's got contracts, who the ins are, who's the committee telling people to hire, how dare they do that. You know, it's been going on forever and ever. And there's always carping about whatever senator's in charge is using the committee to move their own ambitions, sometimes presidential. There's a lot of it when Phil Graham ran the committee in the cycle before the 96 presidential, and he was a primary candidate. But this time, it's all over the newspapers, and they're out of money, canceling millions of dollars of television time with leaks from the McConnell side, leaks from various consultant crime families being all upset about it. And a lot of it is this thing they did. And the committee folks, the Scott folks, will say, well, we did spend a lot of money, but what we were doing was attracting new low-dollar donors digitally to the party. Well, true. But what was also, I believe, true was some hacks in the Senator Scott's orbit of Florida, that Senator Scott, were saying, hey, boss, we got a genius idea here, pure genius. We're going to spend tens and tens and tens of millions of dollars on digital advertising to bring in new donors, starring, wait for it, you're the voice. And this, of course, will make you really famous, raise your name ID with base voters that we want to turn into base donors. And let's just say, get ready for the Oval Office, sir. We have a real plan here. So they went out and spent a bunch of money with the rather creepy Senator Rick Scott as the front guy to try to bring in, at a loss, on the theory of you harvest money later, if you lose money creating a donor, the donor will give multiple times, you make the money back and more, and they drain the account. And so they're on to him now. His colleagues are on to him. They're out of money. They're canceling TV time. Now, it's not the end of the world for the IRS, because McConnell's got a big, highly competent political operation that can run a lot of TV money, not always aligned with what Trump wants.
But everybody's sniping at each other. It's
totally.
Well, Scott ought to be used to this, because he paid a $2 billion fraud settlement when he was in the healthcare industry back in the day. So he understands financial controversy.
Yeah, he knows how to make a calculator say "ouch," no doubt about it,
and others as well. But all I'm saying is, this is a very funky look for a party that was supposed to be sailing into a, you know.
Keystone Cops.
And we'll see what happens, because I still, a lot of these races are marginal, and it comes down to turnout. The one thing that's happened is after Dobbs and everything else we talked about, the Democratic interest in the election has basically caught up with Republican interest in the election. And one of the reasons that the incumbent party usually loses these midterms is that their voters are less interested than the people who are angry about being on the outs. And so the opposition party comes out in larger numbers. Yeah. And that looked like what was going to happen here. You had a dispirited Democratic Party. A Republican Party that was all pumped up to send a message about Biden and inflation and crime and the border. And now turnout looks like it could be sort of even.
Well, and ours have a demographic advantage too in the off year, because our grumpy old voters show up and your young hip voters have a rave to go to.
Which is another reason why the Dobbs thing, because you see.
Yeah, right. That's the key to Dobbs, I think.
Yeah.
Will it make a material difference? So let me just say, for our Democratic friends out there, are like, oh, thank Christ, let's have another white wine spritzer and get ready to win. Take a look at the Georgia race, where Herschel Walker, who basically, just Google him and listen to some of the clips. Worst candidate in the world, despite all that equity he has as a famous sports hero. He's still hanging in there. You know, in a wave election, this summer stuff can melt away. And if it reverts to normalcy and the Republicans all go inspect the Pacific Fleet, some boxes of hammers can be elected to the Senate. It is, it becomes a one-way thing. And that monster is still out there despite the Republican massive stumbling and incompetence.
There was some pollster, I think it was a British pollster looking at, but anyway, some pollster was evaluating the underrepresentation of Trump voters in the last several cycles, and that has made, you know, being precise about particularly state polling very difficult. And, you know, when you look at how marginal some of these races are, you can see where they could turn. What seems clear is that Republicans, and nothing is, you know, I want to, everything comes with a disclaimer that this could all be bullshit and we'll be eating crow the day after the election. But
Wait. We're supposed to admit that after we've run the ads and get paid, Axe. Remember the meeting?
All right.
Go ahead.
You can cut that out, Jeff, and we'll. But it does appear that the House is going to be far less robust for the Republicans than was initially predicted. And I'm told that, you know, there's quite a bit of concern in McCarthy land about
there
this.
Ought to be. So the perception, because politicians are emotional critters like everybody else, the perception in the House Republican Conference.
Or even more so.
Yeah. No, they want the love of strangers. They're like stand-up comedians. It's a crazy life they embrace. Love me. But the perception in the Republican ranks in the House was, ooh, it's going to be big, big, big. We're going to have a wipeout. Ooh, play Braveheart again. A lot of jumping around. They've actually done that in conference meetings. Let's all watch Braveheart and get psyched up. So anyway, and I think about how many of these guys I got elected. But they're very excited. And now they're finding out that they're not going to get the new train set on Christmas morning. You know, they're going to get a nice lollipop. And there's anger in the troops. They're reacting emotionally in a mere opposite of how the Democrats are all high-fiving each other now. We're back. So should it happen that the it's a single-digit or very low teens win instead of 25 seats, which I agree with you is more likely, might have always been more likely, because we have fewer swing seats now with redistricting. Anyway, McCarthy's going to have some mad troops. So all of a sudden, the amount of whispering in the hallways I'm hearing back through my many sources who only admit under duress to talking to me up there, is like, boy, Kevin really screwed this one. You know, we don't really like Kevin. He's not really one of us. You know, it started, the intrigue.
Yeah.
And
the
idea of Speaker McCarthy, if they win by 9 seats or whatever, being a given, I don't believe it all anymore, nor have I ever.
Okay, let's take a break right here for a word from our sponsor, and we'll be right back.
Now, a word from our sponsor, BetterHelp.
You know, Mike, we both have spent a lot of our lives in highly stressful situations where it's really easy to get bogged down in thinking about things that were going wrong, things that were challenging. and you get in that hole, and sometimes it's hard to get out, and you need some help. And where do you get it these days?
Well, BetterHelp. You know, David, you're right. It can be tough to train your brain to stay in problem-solving mode when faced with a challenge in life. And we all have so many challenges. It's a core part of life. And how you navigate them is really important to your mental health. So when you learn how to find your own solutions, well, as you know, there's no better feeling. A therapist can help you become a better problem solver, making it easier to accomplish your goals, no matter how big or how small. And that's where BetterHelp comes in.
I've had periods in my life where I've needed help and I've talked to someone, and it helps you get clarity about some of the issues that you're coping with. It helps restore some perspective and get you back on track to really get to the core of some of the things that are bogging you down.
Yeah, no, look, I have to spend an hour a day with you and Gibbs. Are you kidding? I need a lot of help navigating
that stress. Feel like we're giving you therapy. But
you probably are. You probably are. That's true. But look, for our listeners, if you're thinking of giving therapy a try, BetterHelp is a tremendous option. It's convenient, accessible, affordable, and entirely online. What happens is you get matched with a therapist after filling out a brief online survey, and you have the power here. You can switch therapists at any time you want to find the right match so it's productive for you.
It's really important. When you want to be a better problem solver, therapy can get you there. Visit BetterHelp.com/hacks today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/hacks.
Give it a try.
I wanted to play this ad the last time we were together, and we didn't have time to do it. But this is an ad from Mark Kelly in Arizona.
Kelly, the former astronaut who's raised a lot of money in strong shape in a tough state.
Yes. So let's listen to that ad.
I'm the mayor of Mesa and a Republican. The last few years have been tough on our local businesses, and our community needed help. That's when I heard from Mark Kelly. We may be from different political parties, but that doesn't matter for Mark. For him, we're all on Team Arizona. That's who Mark is. He secured critical funding to help save our small businesses. Mark doesn't look for ways to blame Democrats or Republicans. He looks for a way forward.
I'm Mark Kelly, and I approve this message.
So, you know, when you listen to that ad and listen to the Biden speech, you have to ask yourself, are they on the same page?
No, they're not.
Right.
I mean, that is a shrewd ad. We both run those kind of ads before where you're trying to peel off the country club Republicans.
Right.
Because the knuckle draggers are too scary for them. By the way, disclosure, I think I'm a Mark Kelly donor from about a year ago.
Okay.
Because there was some, the Republican took a crack at McCain. I got pissed. I sent Kelly money. So bottom line is, that's why I think if I had to bet my house, I'd bet on Kelly to win. And that's why if I had to bet on Biden's political standing on election day, I'd probably bet it's going to be a little lower.
Right. Now, the other thing I want to say relative to the Biden speech, there's a guy, Pat Ryan, who just got elected in that special in upstate New York. And I saw an interview with him, and I was really impressed by it, and he talked about his message, the winning message, and he said he's a former serviceman, and he said, meaning he was in the service, and he said, you know, my race was all about freedom for women and their families to make the most intimate choices about their bodies and abortion, freedom to send our kids to school without fear that they're going to be, you know, mowed down by a mass murderer with an assault weapon, freedom to vote and confidence that your vote is going to be counted. And it was, you know, he threw his whole message in the context of freedom in a swing district. And you know better than I, Murphy, I don't know how many thousands of times you've used that word in your advertising, but that is something that will appeal to swing voters, to independent voters, to Republican-leaning independents, and to some Republican voters.
Right. No, you frame it to go where the voters are. It's the old advertising slogan, don't sell the drill, sell the hole it makes. You know, there was a Democratic political hack.
I don't even know what that makes, but it sounds pretty wise.
No. It's just you sell the benefit. You fit the consumer where the consumer is. You go to them in the mentality to get a universal appeal, which is what that does. There was a Democratic.
I've never used a drill. That's why I had to ask.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's the problem with your party. You need to not make more people know how to change a tire.
I agree with that.
You wouldn't lose the white working class to Trump every damn election. But back to the point. There was this wonderful guy, and I'm blanking on his name in my dotage here, which embarrasses me. I haven't seen him in a decade. But he was a big Democratic lobbyist for the National Association of Home Builders in D.C. And I remember chiding him a little. Boy, that's a Republican outfit. You know, you're a Democrat. How do you survive? He said with his Indiana drawl, well, you know, people look at me and said, oh, no, not a Democratic home builder. And I said, no, I'm a home building Democrat. And, you know, that really frames it well. It's where they are. So is Mark Kelly.
Right.
So, yeah, we don't need Biden to be a left-wing version of Trump rhetorically and just kerosene on the war.
So on the Stobbs thing, here's the second thing I wanted to get to. You've seen Republicans en masse now try and move
a little
bit left on this issue. You've got 12 states with flat-out bans on abortion now, no exceptions. And I think this is deeply, deeply frightening people. You saw what happened in Kansas. So now you have guys like Blake Masters down in Arizona who had, you know, a personhood amendment on his website and very, very strong anti-abortion language, removes it all, doesn't add, sort of positing himself as a moderate and on abortion. You know, the question is, can you just erase everything that's just happened, or do people sense it for what it is?
Well, you can't erase it, but you can sure shuffle over a little bit and take some of the energy out of the anger. You know, to quote the great conservative Winston Churchill, when the facts change, so does my opinion. What they're going to do is understand that the real center of gravity in most places on abortion is not where the left-wing, you know, center of the Democratic Party is, and it sure isn't where the no-exceptions world is. And they're going to kind of nudge their way over there. Will it change the abortion problem for them? No. Could it dull the knife a little and take some of the energy out of it for more casual voters who aren't single issue? I think it might work. I mean, the general election shuffle to the center is a venerable political tactic, not even unknown to Team Obama on some issues. And so I think there will be some. It won't save them, but it'll help them.
I will let that gratuitous sway go by. I'm too big to respond to that.
To stoop to that kind of political.
But the problem here is they're not shuffling to the left from positions that they took in previous years, or this is like positions they took in previous weeks.
Oh, no, I agree. And look, the Democrats can prosecute it. And the good thing for the Democrats, even if the Republicans succeed in convincing people, well, they've moderated a little, it still makes the center of the discussion abortion rights, which is not what the winning Republican campaign in the suburbs looks like.
Right.
So it's just a question of how big of a lottery do the Democrats win. If I were working for one of these chumps, I'd be saying the same thing, which is, you know, I've heard a lot from the people of the state. I think we can find a consensus that there are fewer abortions. You know, they're for abortion in demand. They want to use your tax money to pay for abortion, blah, 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 and try to blur it to the center a little more. I'm still losing, but I'm not losing as badly. And that's why they're trying to do it, because they got nothing else. Well, I lied to you to win the primary and keep Trump away from endorsing against me, frankly. I didn't mean any of this shit. I just want the free haircuts in the Senate. They look pretty good. You know, they can't do that, though. Somebody ought to try that. I would love to have the Bulworthian, you know, meltdown where somebody says, oh, Christ, I don't think I care about abortion. I don't care at all. I was just pandering. It's politics.
Yeah. Well, that would be the truth in about 60% of the cases, certainly on Trump.
You know,
where they all know better. I mean, there's no bigger Trumpy out there right now than Carrie Lake, the governor's candidate in Arizona. And I think she was an Obama donor.
There's no bigger pro-choice Trump MAGA nut than Trump.
Yes.
You know, Trump's about as pro-life as AOC. You know, and so it's just, anyway, the cynicism of it all is deafening. Quickly, the Senate races, I wanted to ask you, there's a little bit of a storm in Pennsylvania where Doc Oz has been circling the drain, unless he's one of those blocks of cement that a wave can elect.
Yes.
Fetterman is under some editorial attack for apparently getting a little dodgy about debates citing health. What would your advice be to the Fetterman guys to get out of this thing?
He's been dodging debates, but he hasn't been dodgy in the sense that he's been very open about the fact that he's still recovering from his stroke and he has some auditory processing issues. And, you know, the Republicans are trying to figure out how to, you know, Oz took a big swipe at him on it that kind of landed with a thud. But, I mean, look, it's going to be an issue in the race. I will say this. People have affection for Fetterman. He is more popular than I realized when this race started. Primarily because people think he's authentic.
Yeah, he's an unpolitician. You know, we talked about that a lot. It was either going to be he's Bernie and he's dead, or he's unpolitician and he'll be really strong. And it seems to be going that way.
Yeah. But I expect that there'll be more focus on this as time goes on. Can he function effectively in the Senate? But I have to say, Oz is sitting there with a 60% unfavorable. He's not really a Pennsylvanian, which is a problem.
Yeah.
You know, and that has become painfully obvious that he moved over from New Jersey because he wants to go to the Senate. We don't have to spend a lot of time on him talking about vegetable plates and as crudités.
You know, Fetterman ought to say, sure, I'll debate you, but only in New Jersey. I want you to be comfortable.
You know, I'll tell you something. No one in history has run a better race with the candidate sort of on the bench than the Fetterman people have.
I agree.
Their campaign, they have dogged Oz. I mean, he's helped. He went on a long European vacation after the primary, and he regularly shoots himself in the foot.
No, but you're right. It's like a Jackie Chan movie. I mean, every time I see Oz, he's flying through the air upside down. You know, it's just terrible. And Oz is so bad at it.
But I mean, this is going to be an issue. But I think the hard thing for the Republicans is there is affection for Fetterman. There's no affection for Oz. And so if they go after him with a blunt instrument on this, I think there could be a backlash to it.
And Oz doesn't seem to have subtlety. I mean, God, I hope he doesn't operate like that because he'd need a chainsaw. This thing could be done lightly. Look, if you can't do a debate, we ought to step back and think about, is it your time to be in the Senate? Instead, it's like, I'll pay for a team of doctors to stand there. Well, you know, anyway. But I think it's a thing the Fetterman people are going to have to figure out here because it could break through.
Yeah, they ought to employ the old some people talk, other people do strategy and try and use a little jujitsu on this issue.
Yeah. A senator who doesn't give long speeches, how can I vote for him?
Exactly. And you wanted to talk about the Wisconsin Senate race as well, right?
Yeah, well, just for a minute, what's your take on, you know, Ron Johnson's the most beatable guy up for re-election in a 50-50 state like Wisconsin, but Mandela Barnes is not what I'd call the strongest general election candidate. He's kind of an inspiring character.
That was the conventional wisdom.
Well, that's me.
Yeah, I know.
Clearly.
I look to you for that. But he's the lieutenant governor. He has an activist profile out of Milwaukee. But you know, he went through a primary campaign and he sort of outlasted a guy with a lot of money and some well-respected state officials. And he's in a pretty strong position. I mean, he's polling ahead. I don't know if he's 7 points ahead as the Marquette poll suggests, but he's definitely ahead. Partly because Johnson's so unpopular and sort of off kilter that he's been kind of an embarrassment to the state. The question is whether they can paint a picture in the last 8 weeks, 9 weeks of Barnes as a kind of left wing. You know, there are pictures of him with defund police I think it has to do with ICE, you know, abolish ICE.
Really? During this hot summer?
Exactly.
Sorry, lame joke, couldn't resist. But you're right. I mean, what the Johnson people would say.
There you go. Thank you.
I'm
Jeff,
here all week. Yes. Dip your server. You know, if it were James Mace, it would go something like that. What the Johnson people would say if they were here was what we needed was a candidate that would allow us to make the race not about Johnson, but about Biden and liberal Democrats. And we have that with Barnes. So now they got what they wanted. We'll see if they could execute it because Johnson's numbers are terrible. They need a big switch like that. And as you say, 9 weeks and counting.
Yes. We'll see. But it does say something about how the year is evolving here,
yeah.
that a Democrat is leading, that this Democrat in particular, but the Democrats are leading in Wisconsin, which is, as you say, the ultimate bellwether state, a 50-50 state. And I think there's a place where Dobbs may be a decisive factor in the suburbs of Milwaukee and in bringing younger voters out. And
Yeah. One thing we know so far about Dobbs is in the college towns, turnout has soared. So keep an yes. eye on old reliable left-wing Dane County there to see if there's extraordinary Democratic turnout. And as you say, the suburbs.
You invoked the name of the great Winston Churchill. And I know that you are certainly among the annals of or among the ranks of the hacks. You are the number one Anglophile. And so I know you've been watching with rapt
attention. I'm actually
more
of a Francophile, but I kind of like Brit politics. Which you've worked in. You got.
I have. Yeah, no, I enjoy it as well.
Country too.
So we have a new prime minister.
We do. We do. As of today, the Queen got out the magic scepter and it's done. So what I was doing here, I felt like a French diplomat because a few months back I thought, oh, I know, we can hustle these limeys. We're trick them into coming on Hacks on Tap in a huge ratings boom. We're going international. Because we actually, this thing, through the magic of the interweb, as you well know, goes everywhere. We're like the number three podcast in Ghana of politics. So we get this crazy sheet with all these country breakouts. We have a lot of listeners in the UK. God bless you. Other Commonwealth countries, Canada, Australia, too. So I thought, all right, we're going to lure him on here for 10-minute interviews by phone. So I joined. I paid my 50 quid, and I joined the Conservative Party. You're allowed to join if you're a foreigner. And I thought, aha, I'll sell my vote. But like the French diplomat, I was too clever by half. Those, you know, they ran an empire for a reason. They're crafty. And they have a little sub thing in the membership deal, paragraph 917, that no stupid Americans or foreigners are allowed to vote in the party election, but we will take your money for like 12 weeks. So I couldn't vote. And of course, they blew us off. Bottom line is, fascinating election. Only 160,000 people voted. Their primaries are much smaller because you got to be a paid-in member. They only have about 175,000. She won by 20,000 votes. Now, the CW there, which tends to be, as you know from working there, kind of a bubble think, all said she'd beat them 2-1, wipe them out. She won 57-43, she being Liz Truss, who beat Rishi Sunak, who was the Chancellor of the Exchequer, leading anti-Johnson plotter, helped him in the parliamentary stage of the election, where only their members all voted to take it down to 2, which he dominated. She was behind. She made it into the second place. Then it went to the membership. They had the vote. She won by 20,000, and she's it. She ran on base issues, tax cuts, good stuff. But now they're behind in the polls, those Tories are. And Keir Starmer, the Labour yeah. names are fantastic, is going to give her the race of her life unless she can have a comeback. Made a lot of big promises. The party split.
One interesting thing to your point is she made a point of paying very effusive tribute to Boris Johnson, the outgoing prime minister who quit in disgrace as part of her presentation. And I know you love tax cuts. It seems like an odd prescription for inflation, which is they've got inflation problems there.
Right.
As
well, they've got exploding energy costs because of Ukraine. So she right. said, I'm the conservative. I'm going to cut taxes and I'm going to spend £100 billion making sure you don't actually have to pay your energy bill now because, the country's in an uproar with the exploding prices. I don't know. I thought Sunak was the stronger candidate to win. And what I liked about Sunak, and I'll give a salute to the Tories here, they have done the best job of any Western right of center party at becoming a diverse multicultural party by far. Mm-hmm. He was symbolically very important, and he was kind of the tip of that iceberg of success they've had. Look at the cabinet. I mean, it's amazing the Republicans could learn from it. But she was not seen as an anti-Johnson plotter like he was, which was true. That worked with his parliamentary peers, but not with the grassroots.
Yeah, he was the one. He administered the fatal blow to
Johnson.
Yeah,
he was the Brutus of the deal. And Johnson remembered that. He was pretty active for Truss. So, okay, now she's got to ride the bucking bronco, and they got a lot of problems there, and they're behind Labour. We'll see what happens. I wish her well, and now that I'm a member of the party, and I will be able to vote next time, so we expect the candidates here on Hacks on Tap.
Maybe you can be in the cabinet over there.
You know, I'm open. I have to say, I've always wanted to be first Sea Lord, so that's appointed. But M.O.D., yeah.
I want to see you become the first Hacks on Tap got knighted by the Queen.
Well, so. as a son of Ireland, I think that's highly unlikely because I'm Murphy, M-U-R-P-H-Y, the Catholic, not the M-U-R-P-H-E-Y, which is the Protestant
version.
Yeah,
that could be
so
limiting. You're right.
I don't think I'm going to be down at Swords R Us buying my ceremonial saber anytime soon. But thank you for the sentiment, my friend.
No, that's okay.
Hey, Axe, we just got a telegram here from Buckingham Palace. The Queen's been listening in to make sure we did justice to the new PM, and she says, enough jibber-jabber, get to the questions. So we have a royal decree here.
Yeah.
Time to play the music.
It's Listener Mailbag.
Shows you how long the Queen's been around that she sent a telegram. Someone needs to update her. Anyway, go ahead.
All right, if you have a question, send it to us at our secret squirrel mailbox, hacksontap@gmail.com, hacksontap@gmail.com. And don't forget to subscribe to the must-read Hacks on Tap newsletter. Twice a week, goes right into your email inbox. We answer questions. We insult Axelrod. We have a lot of fun. Gibbs and I do it. Plenty of stuff not in the podcast. It's free. Just go to hacksontap.bulletin.com, hacksontap.bulletin.com. All right, for Professor Axelrod from Peter.
Yes,
Peter. Here we go, Quizmaster.
Okay.
People seem to think that donations to a candidate's campaign go directly into that candidate's pocket. Legally, that's certainly not how it works. Can one of you, esteemed gentlemen, Axe, I'll let you handle this one, walk me through the mechanics of corruption via political donations? And we can exempt Cook County from all this. All right, we're talking about
the federal system. Well, let me tell you something. Until 1998 in Cook County, you could take campaign contributions and you could keep them and use them for personal use if you paid taxes on it.
Fair enough.
And the person who changed that was a state senator named Barack Obama, who passed a reform law making the obvious point that this literally would be legalized bribery. And so it's no longer the case in Illinois. But Illinois was a late adopter to the idea that you shouldn't be able to just hand
You're like a cat.
Cash.
I throw you a nice, nasty question about Cook County corruption, and you land on Obama saving the day. It's amazing. I don't know. You should work for that guy or something. You know, I'll tell you, it's a skill.
But the fact is that, you know, no campaign contributions can't be treated as personal income. And several members of Congress have gone to prison very recently for doing that very thing. That said, you know, there are broad uses for it. You can, you know, Donald Trump is using campaign. It may be the RNC, but I think it's his own, you know, huge trough of money that he's raising from individuals. Yeah, to pay for some of his legal expenses.
And just a quick interjection. Part of the problem, we talked about the committees not raising low-dollar money, is because Trump's hoovering it all up, which is starving regular Republican fundraising for his own devices.
But we ought to say, though, that the corrupting element of contributions, particularly large contributions, and there's another aspect that applies to small contributions, is the impact that they have on decisions that politicians make. And, you know, Washington is awash in money. Candidates need money to run. And even when you're running on small dollar contributions, I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene is a master fundraiser. Why? Because she inflames the base, and the base has certain expectations of what she's going to do as a result of that. So I continue to be worried about money in politics. I think small donations are better than large, but there is a lot of organized money that influences how decisions are made. And that's really the corruption that we talk about today, not the old Chicago style.
You know, there are a few members who will do the stupid thing, like their idiot brother-in-law will go on the campaign payroll as an organizer. There's some of that stuff. But fundamentally, what it is they're sitting around and a Murphy or an Axelrod shows up and says, hey, you're getting killed out there. The poll numbers are terrible. And they say, well, I need $3 million of TV and direct mail to fix it. Where do I get it? Well, we have a couple of fine special interests over here. We'd love to hear your view. So the money is the heroine of their career to survive in the tough world of politics, where some crazy billionaire may come in to try to defeat them. So they're desperate to raise money, which oils a system where they pay attention to big donors, not so much to put money in their own pocket, but as David says, to move forward in an expensive arena of politics.
Okay, Audrey asks Murphy, if Trump decides to run in 2024, which seems apparent that he will, do you think he would pick DeSantis for vice president?
Well, first of all, Audrey is my daughter's name, so I'm not going to immediately make fun of your question, Audrey, because it's a wonderful name. No, he will not. He will not. He would rather have a stuffed DeSantis head on his desk as a tchotchke to tell visitors about than put him in as VP. And knowing DeSantis, Trump would need the Secret Service to put on five more food testers. So no, that one doesn't work. Now, in the rational world,
you know that old joke, by the way, but Murphy, just before you finish, the old joke about after Eisenhower had his heart attack in 56, that he and Nixon were walking along the steps, the plaza in front of the Capitol, and they're looking up the Capitol steps, and Nixon says, "Race you to the top, Mr. President." So that would be DeSantis.
That would be grim. Now, you're right in history, Audrey, that people have not picked people because it was politically smart that they didn't like, and kind of sidelined him a bit, a long history of that kind of stuff. LBJ was not treated particularly well by the Kennedys, for example. But Trump is so, and let me know if you disagree, Axe, but Trump is so zeroed in on his grievances and resentments and insecurities, he wants a factotum. So I think he would never pick DeSantis because DeSantis is seen as a rival.
Well, he thinks Mike Pence, who was one of the most loyal vice presidents in the history of the country, was a Brutus because he wouldn't overturn the election. So he's going to be putting a premium on absolute slavish loyalty, I think, if he is the candidate again. Okay, so we have to ask one for Gibbs, even though Gibbs is not here, but then we get to answer for him, which is better for everyone anyway.
Oh, I like it. Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so Andrew has an interesting question. Do you think that the Biden administration has given thought for President Biden issuing a pardon to former President Trump for any crimes he committed as president and for the current National Archives document issues? It would put Trump in a bind in that he would have to admit wrongdoing in order to accept the pardon, and Biden would look like the bigger man in trying to move past Trump so that he and the nation could concentrate on the pressing issues of the day. Is this realistic? Would you do it before or after the midterms?
You know, that is a fascinating question, Andrew, because there might be a moment where Trump is desperate enough to kind of take the plea here. The problem is, unlike Nixon, where, you know, we've had this problem before, what do you do if a disgraced president? You can't rely on Trump to shut up and go write his memoirs. You know, he'd be out getting into the election every day. And if you did it now, Trump would probably say, "I reject the pardon. I want a trial." So you need to get Trump in that moment of whimpering vulnerability where the legal thing is turned and we're not there yet. But it's an interesting idea to kind of cauterize the whole national wound, which was the argument Ford made. By the way, a quick plug, Don Rumsfeld, before he died, wrote a great book about the transition from Nixon to Ford. People forget that Rummy was,
Chief of Staff.
Chief of Staff, Ford White House. And it's fascinating about how they kind of put Nixon down. But anyway, doubt it'll ever happen. But theoretically, it's kind of an interesting idea.
There are a lot of Democrats listening right now who are howling their discontent with that question.
Well, send your angry letters to David Axelrod at the University of Chicago Institute of Politics. Just wax on for a sec to make that hate mail worth it. It's kind of interesting, though. I don't think it'll ever happen. What's your take? Quickly, David, and then we'll sign off.
I think Joe Biden is right now thinking about running for president again, and I'm not sure that he would make a move like that. It is a kind of Solomonic way to move the country past that. But you're right. I mean, it also would require Trump acknowledging his crimes. Although, I mean, would a prophylactic kind of pardon require that? Neither of us are lawyers.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, but
we have to call the 1-800 law line to figure it out. I think the fundamental flaw of it is it requires Trump to have some honor, and Trump has none. So you can't make any kind of deal with Trump, even for the good of the country, because he will still be Trump.
And we'll check and see if he has any honor next week.
Yeah, we're having an update on that. We're put Gibbs on it now that he's our special correspondent out in the field. Oh, always fun to talk to you, David. Happy post-Labor Day.
Looking forward to the stretch run here. We'll see you next time.
We'll be here covering it all. Thanks, everybody.
All right.